What up, what up, what up? Welcome back to Whatever We Want with Jay and Kay. She is Kay Kalala Elliott.
And he is Jay Jamal Sterling. Hey, Jamal, what's up?
Oh, man, it's been, first of all, okay, it's hot as hell.
It's so hot.
My damn, it's so hot.
Like, we're recording and I'm like, can we turn the air up a little bit? It's hot up in here.
Oh, I had to go for a drive yesterday and just getting in my car is like, what the hell is going on? It's 109 degrees yesterday.
All I'm saying is people don't believe climate change is real, but there's continual proof that the earth is getting hotter as we speak.
Yeah.
This is that never got above 95 or now on a regular basis hitting 103 and 106 like it's nothing.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's the end days, y'all. Unfortunately.
Indeed. Well, I don't know about you, but there has been a lot popping up in my news feed this week. And
same here.
Oh my God. Where to begin? Where would you like to begin this week?
All right. Let me okay. I sent you a video a little bit earlier on Instagram.
Yes, you did.
Did you watch my video of that commercial?
I did. I hope that it's the right one. You know, there's a weird thing whenever I click on Instagram for some reason, it always takes me to multiple, like every time I click on the link, it'll open up a different video. So I hope I clicked on the right one.
Is this the one with a political candidate?
Yes. Yes. That's the one you said.
Okay. So so let's start off a little light slash not light. I was sent a commercial by a friend who was making comedy. Is a commercial for a campaign commercial for a dude named Jerome Davis, and we have to put this in the notes of the show because this commercial, it is awesome for on both sides. It could be awesome if you're a Democrat, awesome if you're a Republican for totally different reasons.
Why don't you set it up for the audience since they haven't seen it?
So this is a Black Republican named Jerome Davis. And the commercial starts off with him sitting at his table. He's sitting at his kitchen table and he's contemplating something. And you hear a narration about the dangers of losing your Second Amendment rights and losing your guns. And then they pan away to Klansmen, like old school Klansmen, you know, they got the hood on and everything. Mm-hmm. And these Klansmen inexplicably are attacking this man's house, but they're attacking this man's house with rakes and hoes, you know, like and gardening tools. And
no, burning crosses.
And this Black man comes out and he's expressing the need for a gun. And he pulls out an AR-15, fully loaded, by the way, and walks out. And he makes this line about if you want to protect your home against 10 Democrats in Klan robes, you're going to need an AR-15. Now, a few questions here. Number one, why is he the only one with the AR-15 and the Klan hasn't discovered AR-15 yet? They're like, we're going to get rakes.
I believe the Klan is the NRA's primary base, right?
And that's the funny thing, the Republicans saying, oh yeah, dealing with 10 Democrats in Klan robes, which is like, well, if you want to go historically, yeah, maybe. But in our current climate, not so much.
Yeah, I will tell you, I was very confused about what political party he even belonged to. I was like, is he? Because he initially, it sounded like, and we will include a link to this video in the show notes, you all, up here, because I'm sure it's hard to imagine this. But when I was watching it, the first thing I was like was, well, what party does he belong to? It wasn't clear to me because he's very disparaging against Democrats. But he's clearly, whether he's a Democrat or a Republican, he's someone who is pro-gun rights.
Right. He's very.
Yeah. Okay. Very.
But I think the inner joke, a few inner jokes is that he had to say Democrats and Klan robes because immediately when you see a Black man with a gun against the Klan, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
You're thinking
that's why I was confused because I was like, this Black man defending his home. And then I was like, wait a minute, Democrat, Klansman. I'm not saying that there probably aren't a lot of Democrats who are in the Klan, but overwhelmingly, I would not say that's their base.
I'm just really struck at the Klan not discovering guns yet. That's really hilarious. Like they're all like, get your rakes, guys.
You got a gun, y'all. Let's get out of here.
Maybe he traveled in time. Maybe it was a time travel thing. And like, I don't know. Yeah, the dude's name is Jerome Davis. We should really laugh at him all the time. But meanwhile, on the right, the right thinks this is the greatest commercial ever made. It is. I've seen some like, wow, amazing. I'm like, just sit and think about it for a minute. It's really dumb. It's a really, really dumb commercial. So Jerome Davis, I hope you I want to say a lot of rude things. Best to you, brother. Best to you. He's from Mississippi, by the way, which is the whole joke. Yeah. Shocking. But
well, no, it's interesting that you brought that up because in somewhat related news, I guess, since you mentioned the Klan, have you heard the new, I know, right? Like,
since we're talking about the Klan.
Since we're talking about the Klan. well, this isn't direct. Well, it could be the Klan. I don't know. But it certainly involves a bunch of white supremacists with guns. Have you heard the latest update on the woman who lied on Emmett Till? You know, there was an arrest warrant that was issued, I think, in 1955. And it's been nearly 70 years, literally 70 years since Emmett Till was kidnapped and murdered on the word of this white woman. This white woman has been able to go on, live her life, have children, have a family, grow old. The arrest warrant that was meant to be served to her was never served. So there is a growing ruckus of protesters who have taken up court outside this woman's home. They are calling on the local police to actually arrest her. So I'm curious to know your thoughts about that.
Man, if they don't arrest an old racist white lady immediately, it's always funny how, like, justice, everybody demands justice until there's some shit that's been done, outrageous shit done to black people. Mm-hmm. So, like, she didn't have her punk ass put up under a jail. But, like, here's the thing, though, because I know it's been what? There have been several attempts over the decades to try to get this woman into a prison, and it seems to be the hardest thing on earth to do.
But I don't think there have truly been intents. By the way, this woman's name is Carolyn Bryant Donham. I want to make sure we call her name out. Carolyn Bryant Donham. I think that's how you pronounce her last name. Previously identified as Mrs. Roy Bryant. If you've been living under a rock and maybe don't know all of the details of the Emmett Till case, long story short, Emmett Till was a 14-year-old boy who was from Chicago, I believe, visiting his family in Mississippi. He was accused of whistling at this white woman, at Carolyn, which was not true, did not happen. And in the middle of the night, she, along with her husband and several other men, arrived at his uncle's home, kidnapped this 14-year-old boy, tortured him, and murdered him.
Yeah.
The men, I believe, stood trial, but I don't remember if they were
convicted. They stood trial immediately and were immediately exonerated.
Right.
And, like, the jury went back there and said it didn't take them more than 3 hours.
Meanwhile, this woman who lied, set all this in motion, for whatever reason, there was a warrant issued for her arrest, was never served. Literally never served. What's interesting is also in the news, I think in the last week, was the arrest of a 101-year-old Nazi who, guess what, ladies and gentlemen, is going to jail. You know why? Because in Germany, they recognize that there is no statute of limitations on your crimes, especially crimes against humanity is what I would basically say, crimes against humanity.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, there. What I have been surprisingly pleased by is much of the commentary that I've seen, and I try not to pay too much attention to the comment sections, but sometimes you're curious.
That's where all the mess go down.
Yeah, but here's what's interesting is that what's in the water is most people like you and I are like, no, arrest that heifer.
I was like,
she got the privilege of living out her entire life, and Emmett Till's life was cut short as a child.
Right.
You did the crime. Sorry, sis. You had plenty of time.
Well, dude, when you think about it, you think about the beginning of the civil rights movement. You know, famously, it's considered Rosa Parks sitting on a bus, but honestly, most people
this
say
this was the moment. Him. Yeah.
So it's just so frustrating that the beginning of the civil rights movement, we still haven't taken care of crimes that happened then, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And to your point, like, while Rosa Parks sitting on the bus certainly ushered in the movement of protest and what have you, but Emmett Till's death was what really moved the needle nationally.
Right.
That's what got woke up white people, honestly, was seeing, and that was intentional on the part of Mamie Till, his mother, which was, no, show my baby's face, show what they did to my boy.
Doing an open casket funeral and showing the pictures, and then it exploding all over the world.
Yeah.
People seeing
it made it real. Unlike George Floyd. He was the George Floyd prior to George Floyd.
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate, but, like, I think me and my brother were talking about this the other day, how, like, you'll hear certain situations, you'll hear a description of a situation, but then seeing the pictures, it's like, oh, like everything became crystallized for people. So when you talk about, you know, abuses by the police or abuses and violence done to people, actually seeing the pictures, it's never the words, it's always seeing the visual, right?
Yeah, that's what they say. A picture is worth a thousand words. So
there
you go. We depressed ourselves yet?
Shall I take the next one? Shall I take the next one?
Yeah, jump in.
Creflo Dollar.
Oh,
all right. Okay, let me say something before the Christians jump on me. I gotta say, I will never trust a man named Creflo Dollar.
I'm gonna say, Creflo Dollar sounds like he's gonna rob me. Right. Everything about his name is just like, even if that's your real name, it's like, if you're gonna go into that profession, you need a name change.
So, televangelist Creflo Dollar renounces past teachings on tithing, but questions persist. So, a recent sermon. Popular televangelist, a megachurch pastor, Creflo Dollar, renounced his decades-long teaching on tithing, the practice of giving 10% of one's income to the church. Tithing is required or even encouraged for believers in Jesus Christ, Dollar stated in his June 26th message, The Great Misunderstanding. Now, pause. It's weird that he never realized this when he was asking his parishioners to buy him a private jet.
For how much? Do you remember how much it cost?
I cannot remember.
It was millions of dollars. It was like, a ridiculous amount of money.
$7 million range.
Yeah, it was a lot of money.
In the before times, I got into a loud argument with several Christians about, well, he should get a plane. Why shouldn't he get... So now Creflo Dollar's coming back and saying, you know what? I've had it after getting all this money. I've had it wrong all along. I'm wanting to know if there's going to be refunds. Are there any?
No, sir. It's just going to be like America. We know we were wrong, but y'all ain't getting no reparations. Sorry.
He's been doing this. He's been really big into what do you call it? When you're
mega churches.
Mega churches, but also when you do the certain religion where you're asking for money in particular. I forget what they call it, the type of evangelism they call that. Prosperity gospel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he's been the prosperity gospel guy for over, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now in his, I think he's in the 70s now. Now he's just now coming to the light. He should be in the 60s, 70s now.
I guess so. I guess it's hard to age people.
Right.
Because that means I have to age myself.
We in our 40s.
Right.
Creflo been still
in his 40s. In my mind, he's still in his 40s and 50s. So, yeah, but you're right.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. What is your position on tithing? We both subscribe to the Christian faith. What is your belief in tithing?
I do believe in tithing. I do believe in it. I do not believe in it at the cost of your own, life. As I mean, if you don't have money,
survival.
Yeah. Thank you. If you don't have the money, I'm to pay not gonna your lie. Bills,
I pay my tithes, and there was a time in my life where I don't actively pay tithes now because I don't belong to a specific church. But, but in the past, I actively tithed, and for the longest, I did always tithe 10%, or 20% or whatever the amount is or whatever. I think it's 10. It's 10%. And I was very consistent in that to your point, so much so that, and this is when I was in my 20s, so much so that I was often without. And to your point, and this is just something I've come to later in my life. And I know about God providing. I know God can provide a ram in a bush and everything else.
Right.
That being said, I also think that God is God is a being of wisdom. And I just think if you can't pay your light bill, paying the church's light bill, I think you should ask. Here's what I will say. I do think that people can go a little bit far and they can go to extremes, meaning like to your point about the prosperity gospel. I think that people have this impression or expectation that if you are a faithful Christian, that you shouldn't have money, that you shouldn't be wealthy. And I don't believe that. I think people of faith, just like everybody else, have the right to be capitalistic. They have the right to earn money. They might have the right to have wealth and all of that. But I do think that the challenge that a lot of people, particularly people who are not within the church, have is when they see parishioners who, and more often than not, when we're talking about the Black community, when you see parishioners who are lower income, who are struggling to get by,
right,
who belong to these mega churches, and the pastors, to your point, are literally asking them to fund a multi-million dollar venture, whatever it might be, it goes, where's the balance? Like, I think that's what people struggle with trying to find. It's just like with corporations, when a CEO is getting paid so much money and the people who are doing the work are getting paid so little, it's like that those disparities are hard to reconcile, particularly when you're talking about within your faith. Like, how do you as a spiritual being reconcile that you're not being fleeced, you know what right. I mean? So to speak. So
I've been a big fan of churches that churches of accountability, where like you have mm-hmm. a lot of these churches, they do quarterly meetings where they say, hey, here's the money that's been donated. Here's where that money's going. Here's what we're using it for. Being very close and upfront, not just being like, hey, give me $6 million because I want an airplane. Or, you know, it's very.
And here's what I will say. I do think that, again, people who are not within the church system, it costs money to run a church, just like any other business and organization. So I'm not one of those people who feels like the church needs to be a shack and you know, that people need to come in with they're all the same, wearing the same suit. I'm not saying that, but I do to your earlier point, I just think it's just the extreme difference in the lifestyle, I think, of so many pastors in this space and their parishioners that people have trouble reconciling with. So, and then again, to your point, when you have a revelation that, hey, maybe we can make some adjustments, then what does that mean for the people who've been pouring into you for so long? So,
The millions and millions has gone in. So, Creflo.
Creflo.
Shout out to a name called Creflo, boy. That was
it's funny that you brought that up because the saints have been on it. Like, it's been so interesting to hear the different varying opinions of everybody on this.
Right. All right.
So I got another update for you. You're a sports fan. Do you follow volleyball?
No.
Not me either.
I do not.
Me either. But I did. There was an interesting development that happened recently at Grambling State University, right down the road from where I grew up in Monroe, Louisiana. But Grambling recently gave a pink slip to its volleyball coach, Chelsea Lucas. Chelsea was apparently hired a year ago, came in, I think at the top of the year, and released every single one of the volleyball players who were on scholarship, like every single player, got rid of the entire team. So that was strike one. A lot of volleyball parents were upset, understandably, because these kids were literally, these are college students who were depending upon their athletic scholarships to continue class. So they didn't have time to transfer to another school. They literally were just told they no longer have a scholarship. So that's huge. Right. So that's part one, but apparently some additional things have happened and she recently was terminated. There's been a lot of discussion and controversy around it. One, because of course people are feeling very protective of the students. And you know, we went to HBCU, so you know that there is a level of affection and community that happens at HBCUs that doesn't necessarily happen at PWIs. But on the flip side of that, there are a lot of people who are arguing, hey, she was hired to come in and to build a team. She couldn't have let all of those athletes go without the permission of the athletic director. It feels like she's being scapegoated. So I'm curious to know, because you are aware of college sports, what your take is on that.
Well, that's ridiculous. So especially with I've got a lot of experience with dealing with students in high school who, like, a lot of, especially girls volleyball, a lot of the girls volleyball is about getting scholarships to go to college. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one that I know. I have a good friend of mine who specifically had his daughter in volleyball for the specific purpose of getting a scholarship to a college. So I very much believe that when you give a scholarship to a child, unless they've done something that takes that scholarship away, something against school rules, you honor that scholarship, because literally it's the difference between them being able to finish their education and not. Yeah. Specifically with volleyball, like girls volleyball in Black colleges, that is usually there. Like, those scholarships are not just about their talent. It's those people are going for those scholarships to be able to go to school. So yeah, that's a gigantic problem. Yeah. That's because then you're not upholding a commitment to the child, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I will say, I do think that any athletic director or coach should have the autonomy to make changes to their team. But I think the thing that people are reacting to, one, is it's such a drastic change so quickly without the opportunity for students to make alternate plans. I think that's what a lot of people are frustrated by. And also, again, to the point that I was making earlier, Grambling is an HBCU, and we do things differently at HBCUs. We're very protective of one another. And so there are things and practices that may happen at other universities that typically don't happen on HBCU, some good and some bad. But it's always generally for the betterment of the student. And so when we're prioritizing, to your point, students and the their giving them opportunities to get educated, to rip that out, which, again, we're still in a lot of instances, especially talking about Grambling and other HBCUs, a lot of these kids are still first time college generation students. Right. You know what I mean? Like a lot of them, they're the first one in their family to go to college. So if they don't have those scholarships, then they're not able to complete their education. Yeah. Right. So it's really unfortunate. I think the way it was handled is what people are most frustrated by.
But now to dig deeper and slightly change the subject is the difference. I know you've gotten this question a lot. I've gotten a question a lot about the difference between going to a Black college and going to a PWI. And like, it's very hard to explain the family concept, the family aspect.
Right.
But one thing that's the thing that kind of levels the playing field is the networking aspect of it.
Absolutely.
Like how the relationships you're in positions now and I'm in position now that came directly from the network I built while I was in my Black college that I could not have built at a PWI.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. Yeah. What else you got going on in your world?
Okay. So here's something that if the law, okay, it's a new law. If it was in, luckily it's not in, luckily it's not in Texas because then I get in a lot of trouble. Florida has made a blasting music in the car a ticketable offense now. The new law allows police officers to fine drivers at least $114 for music that can be heard from their vehicles at least 25 feet away. Now, to give an instance of that, give an example of a car. Let's say you're driving in a standard car measures about, like a Chevy Spark measures about 12 feet long. Mm-hmm. So if your music can be heard from two car lengths away, you can be given a ticket and be pulled over for that. Now, me as a proud Black man from Detroit, Michigan,
who blasts his music on the regular,
sometimes I do it because I'm enjoying my music. Sometimes, to be quite assholish about it, I do it in neighborhoods as a protest. I go to SMU. When I go to the minute I hit that Hillcrest area, pull it up, University.
That's why you got pulled over so many times. How many times you been pulled over by the police?
13, ladies and gentlemen, 13. 13 times.
Near the SMU campus.
But if you can't tell me of a law that is more aimed at Black people than this.
I was just about to say, Florida is not even, the United States in general, but Florida specifically is not even playing around. They're like, yeah, we don't want y'all here.
We're tired of you girls playing this music.
We're going to police everything about you. That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so I was just wondering, what do you feel?
I mean, I will say, listen, you know this, when I lived in New York, I lived above a lounge. Right. My apartment in Harlem was above a lounge. And God. Every day I wanted to murder somebody, like literally. Like I only stayed in that apartment for a year because I was like, I cannot every night. Now, it wasn't a lounge when I moved in. It was a lounge after a couple of months. And so as a neighbor of someone whose music is playing loud, I do find that frustrating. But the thing about being in the car is, number one, they're moving. They won't be there long. Whatever annoyance they may be providing to you in that moment will pass soon enough. So I do think that there are some people who are obnoxious with it, but again, it's fleeting. It's unless they're posted up under your window, what's the problem?
Yeah, it's funny. I try to think about my days when younger and first getting a car and being able to drive around and blast music. But it also used to be an etiquette to it too. So if you're driving on a Sunday, you blast your music.
Yep. You drive up on a church, you got to pull it.
Turn that music down.
You see an older lady.
Driving past an older church, turn it down.
When they start cursing.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
It's
so interesting how this obsession with controlling. It's so ironic, too, that so many of these laws are being passed by Republicans who claim they want so much freedom, but they want to police everybody else.
I was thinking about that this week, too. How much Republicans yell about freedom, and how they want the government out of our business.
Unless it benefits them.
Right.
Or they're the ones manipulating it.
All right. So we both talked about this week. So we got to get into this.
What's that?
Jason Whitlock. Okay, so for those who don't know.
For our listeners, this may or may not turn into a video podcast at some point, but for our listeners, I wish y'all could have seen both of our faces. It's just everyone.
Would you mind set up the situation of Jason Whitlock?
Oh my God, I don't even know if I can, but I'll try.
Okay.
So apparently, in the wake of the Roe v. Wade decision, the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, Leslie Jones, former star of Saturday Night Live, an all around fun lady who just cracks us up on Twitter.
Good sister, by the way. Really good sister, by the way. Good person. I've actually met her once. She's cool as hell.
She's a good person who has a good heart and just is always chill, right? Very chill. Leslie, like most of us, hearing that decision, took to social media and expressed her frustration, specifically, I think, on the 4th of July or around the 4th of July. And she basically said in this video, you know, I don't know what we're celebrating here on the 4th of July. We don't have independence. We don't have freedom. It's basically like we're going back into slavery. All true statements, ladies and gentlemen, particularly if you're a woman and a woman of color, even more so a Black woman in this country right now. So Jason Whitlock and some random, I wish I knew who this woman was who was on
her name.
Show.
Her name is Shamika Michelle.
Yeah, because we don't clown her
too. I did a deep dive on her this week.
Let me not say that. Go ahead. Sorry, y'all. Sorry about to be petty and ugly. Sorry. Oh, pulling it back. Okay. Shamika and Jason Whitlock played a clip of Leslie Jones expressing her opinion about this. And proceeded to rip this Black woman apart. Not necessarily about her comments, but to focus on her looks. That's all they talked about.
They called her rape ape.
Yep.
They said she looked like a monkey. They said she's built like a man. Mm-hmm. They said that she was lucky to achieve the type of fame that she's achieved because she lived in America.
This coming from two also dark-skinned people. Who are not considered traditionally attractive by European standards. And so the unmitigated gall of these two people to go in on her for, number one, expressing the truth. What was untrue about what she said?
Okay. Don't at me.
I had a lot of coffee today, so I'm going to let you know I might be popping off here. Go ahead.
Okay, so I got a bunch of things. First of all, this is rooted in slavery, number one. Absolutely. It is some house nigga,
field nigga
syndrome thing going on right here. We got two other Negroes who are trying to make Massa happy. Massa being the white audiences that they appeal to, who pay their bills. They say, we're going to go as hard on this lady as we can. And we're going to say the things that the people who love us can't say out loud. So whenever I talk about these, I'm going to go in forever on this. Whenever I talk about these conservative, Black conservative pundits, there's two types. There's types who actually believe in conservative values. You know, you have people who like
Colin Powell.
Colin Powell believed in it. Richard Steele. Mm-hmm. I believe his name. He believes in it. And mm-hmm. he actually believes in actual small government. He believes in
fiscally conservative. Values.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you have these coons. Sorry. Had to say it. There's no other word for it.
We going all in.
They shuffling for massa. Period.
I can for points. No.
And so you, when they come out here and just to get these points, and Jason Whitlock, my dear God, has been doing it for 30 years.
I was just going to say he's been on a soap and it only gets worse. Every year he gets his platform grows. It's so disgusting.
The only thing you need to know about Jason Whitlock is Steve McNair. I think I've talked to you about this before. Steve McNair, famous football player. He was murdered. Steve McNair was killed and he was killed by his mistress. All right. We don't know all the details of that. Steve McNair died on July 4th, I think 2008, 2009. On July 7th, Jason Whitlock wrote a column about how Steve McNair cannot be a role model, that he should not be looked up to, that he feels sorry for this dude's kids. The dude's body, he ain't had his
kicking
funeral.
Kicking dirt. I was going to say, yeah, you kicking dirt and the body's still warm.
And that's what I'm saying is like, that's how desperate this dude is for clicks. How desperate this dude is.
He's parasitic. That's what he is. He's a sycophant.
And Shamika Michelle, who's like, she's trying to learn under this vein. You can see she's doing her Candace Owens.
Yep.
She's trying to figure out a way to sell herself out. Mm-hmm. And what I say is at the very end of the day, what's the name of the pizza guy who died trying the pizza guy, Herman Cain.
Oh, yeah.
Herman Cain, who died mm-hmm. as a result of going to a Trump mm-hmm. rally, mm-hmm. went all in for Trump. At the end of the day,
Come on.
At the end of the day,
he about to preach, y'all.
When you die, Mm-hmm. When you were killed because of this, mm-hmm. they won't say nothing about
it. Not a word.
You guys mean
I'm waiting for them to honor Herman Cain.
I felt more sorry for Herman Cain than these so-called white supporters who are sitting up there kissing his ass all this time because he was saying the right things. And the minute he died, they're like, oh, well, moving on.
But also kissing his ass in front of him, because we know what happens when he, and that's the thing. It's like this foolish mentality that somehow you're the exception. Like, you're the black person they like. All the rest of us, you're the exception to the rule. But the exception proves the rule.
It's the O.J. Simpson complex.
Yep. O.J. still.
I'm not black. I'm O.J.
Yep.
Okay.
I know we're using the N-word a lot today, but it is what it is. Sometimes you got to say it fully to get the point across. But
okay. So I got a few other little things. Since I'm getting on to things.
Right, we just ran again this weekend.
I'm ranting. Okay, I've had this conversation, and I aim to. Well, my goal here is to not have this conversation anymore.
Ever again in life.
Ever again in life. Because I have this conversation, I have it invariably with white people all the time, mm-hmm. and people make the argument all the time. So I'm going to say this, and this is not in the black community, not a controversial stance whatsoever. With the rest of America, controversial stance.
Do tell.
Fuck Elvis Presley. Period. Amen. End of discussion.
Chuck D told this a long time ago. Why are we still talking about this?
Never was mentioned. Okay, sorry.
Nope.
So the Elvis movie.
Him, John Wayne, let's go down the list. Who else you got? We're going to destroy all them heroes. Yeah,
I thought that.
21?
Like you said, I thought Chuck D had solved this. I thought he had solved this.
Back in the 90s. Ladies
and gentlemen, a movie about Elvis came out, and it's made by a director that I actually like. I'm one of the people.
Boz Luhrmann.
I'm not one of those people who like they shit on a Romeo and Juliet movie. I liked it.
Yeah, I
saw a little bit of what do you call it? He made my favorite musical movie of all time, which is weird for me.
Moulin Rouge.
I love Moulin Rouge.
Really?
I've never
made it through Moulin Rouge.
I tried not to watch Moulin Rouge, and I was halfway through.
Your wife
made
you watch it, didn't she?
Dude, they started singing Roxanne. I almost had tears coming out of my eye. I actually do like Baz Luhrmann, don't at me. But I don't care what they do with this movie. Mm-hmm. So for anybody who doesn't know about Elvis Presley's legacy, and listen. You can love whoever you want. There are people who love Neil Diamond. I don't understand it. It's okay.
I like Neil Diamond.
I cannot stand it. Oh, good Lord.
Let me just tell you, the first time I was in a bar, I was in New York, and we have songs, right? Like ours is like Mazes Before I Let Go.
Right.
Every black person in America knows that song, right? So apparently for our white friends, it's Sweet Caroline. I was in a bar in New York in my 20s, and that song came on. Y'all, I thought I was gonna have to leave, because first of all, I didn't know what was happening. I was like, what? how does everybody know it's choreographed? It's a big thing. But anyway, I digress. I'm sorry.
especially when we get to the dun, dun, dun. Dun. So the Elvis movie came out, and I got into another conversation with another friend who somehow he was very excited about seeing an Elvis movie, and I'm like, I am not. And he's like, why? I was like, Elvis made his money off the backs of black artists. We all know this. This is not secretive at all.
Yeah, it's a fact.
Hey, yo, if you want something that's really funny to watch, Google Bob Costas interviewing Ray Charles. And Ray Charles
going in. Yeah. I'm like,
yeah, he's like, because Bob Costas on that. So Elvis was amazing, right? And Ray was like, not really. He basically did what we was doing, but because he was white, and he literally stole music from Big Mama Thornton. When I say stole music, he was singing this music. His producers were giving him this music, and he's just like, all right, cool. He did literally go into.
I mean, it happened to a lot of black artists during that time period. They would record a song, and then a white artist would cover it, and it would become popular, and they'd get paid for it, even though the black artist had dropped it first. Go ahead.
So literally, though, he would go into Mississippi juke joints, Louisiana juke joints, all over the South, and he'd watch black artists perform. Mm-hmm. And then when he comes on TV and starts like shaking, and everybody's like, "What?"
Right. It's like, the thing that's funny is like the hip shaking. I'm like, y'all know that came from us. Like, come on, for real? Like, seriously. Now, I'm not even saying he was good at it, but I'm just saying, because that's the other thing. I'm like,
he blatantly was not.
He was not. That's the thing. I was like, everybody loves his hip shaking. I was like, y'all. So he's not good.
So, I've heard so many arguments from the other side that, you know, Elvis did. Apparently, at some point, he gave money to artists, or he gave money to certain people and stuff like that. And I'm like, Yeah, it's a difference.
He also groomed a young girl to and who he later married and had children with. So it's a whole bunch of stuff. Well, he's problematic for so many reasons.
Well, I'm always skeptical of this behind the scenes stuff, as opposed to somebody like the Rolling Stones, when on their first tour, they went and found Muddy Waters and said, "Yo,
right.
You're coming with us.
Right.
Let's make sure everybody knows where we
are." And got more specifically, throughout the course of their career, always acknowledged him and his influence on them. Like Mick Jagger always tells the story of being at the Apollo watching James Brown and how he spent his life trying to duplicate that, you know, how much of an influence he was on him. And to your point, it's like, that's the problem that we have as a community with Elvis and people like Elvis. It's right. The appropriating of our culture and the lack of acknowledging that that's what you're doing, because you're getting paid making money off of our culture and our work, but we don't get paid for it. And until y'all validated there's money to be made. Go ahead.
And even beyond the acknowledgement is the, like you said,
the money.
So like somebody like Muddy Waters, who was having a hard time before they pulled him out on tour, Muddy Waters died with money.
I was just going to say, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Howlin' Wolf, like literally Eric Clapton or someone like that, had to put a headstone on his grave. Like, right. You're talking about people who died without seeing any money compared to the people who ripped them off. I'm just going to call a spade, ripped them off, who went on to great. Elvis's estate is still making money.
Right.
To this day. But to your point, Big Mama Thornton, I bet you her family is not seeing anything.
Exactly. Yep. So fuck Elvis forever. And and I don't mean that personally. I don't know the man.
Yeah, we don't know him, but I know his choices in life.
What he stands for? Screw that dude.
Oh Lord. You're taking a deep breath.
I'm just like, oh.
Oh Lord. Let me ask you. Speaking of which, you were talking about movies. Are you excited about the next Captain America movie with Anthony Mackie? Oh, Lord. What's with that side?
Okay. I just did. We talked about it. The Falcon and Winter Soldier was an okay movie. It was an okay movie.
Wait a minute. I liked Falcon and Winter. You're talking about the TV show.
The TV show.
The TV show was great.
I thought, okay, it was cool.
Like the TV show.
At the end of it, it got a little preachy.
It did get a little preachy near the end. Yes, it was very after school specialist.
His uniform was terrible.
Yeah, his uniform was wet. I need a different uniform.
Golly. So,
that white on his black skin is not flattering.
Yeah. And also, I'm getting a little worried about Marvel in a sense of, we're getting very sitcom-y, y'all. Like we're losing that. My favorite Marvel movie to the point when it came out was Winter Soldier, because Winter Soldier hit so hard. It's like, whoa,
yeah, that's a and big now action. Yeah.
We're getting a lot into the, like, everybody can't be Guardians of the Galaxy. Everybody can, you know.
Yeah,
I'm excited to go see this Thor. I'm excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested. I'm cautiously optimistic about what they'll do with Anthony Mackie and the new Captain America.
Well, I'm encouraged at least to know that there's a brother who's going to be directing his film, Julius Ona. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name correctly.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, he is the director of The Cloverfield Paradox. He is actually going to be directing Captain America 4. It's so interesting. They're calling it Captain America 4, but I feel like even that is a hindrance to Anthony Mackie. Like, I think I read an interview where Chris Evans, who previously played Captain America prior to, sorry, spoiler alert, if you don't follow the MCU.
Captain America.
Right. He sails off into the sunset and knights the next generation's Captain America, which in this case is Anthony Mackie. But even the title, I'm hoping that that's a working title, because Captain America 4, I'm like,
I'm sure they can't just be called, because none of them have really been Captain America 1, 2, 3.
That's true.
So I'm hoping. Well, that sounds great. Is it going to be a major release, or are they going to do?
Oh, yeah, it'll be a major release in 2025. I'm excited because Julius not only is the brother a Nigerian brother, which, you know, I got a weakness for Nigerian man. It's a problem. I'm working on it. But he's also a NYU grad, so I'm excited to see both of these brothers. And of course, Anthony Mackie is a New Orleans native, so you know he's like family to us here. So that's awesome.
So I want to see how it goes, man. Just keep making good products. Don't turn DC on us.
I was just gonna say, they still haven't gone that way, so it's not too bad.
Right.
I want to ask you a question.
Uh oh.
So have you heard about Method Man's apology tour recently?
I saw the apology to Beyonce Destiny's and Friends. Child.
Yeah. Beyonce and Friends.
That's what the group should have been called. Beyonce and Friends.
That's awful, but it's true.
It's true. It's 100% true.
It's true. For the benefit of our audience, just to catch you up if you're not aware. So Method Man, another incredibly good looking man. He is. Keeping it together. Method Man, who I guess is, you know, people reach 50, they start looking back at life choices, they get wiser, hopefully they become a little more sage. Right. Well, Method Man, with his fine self, was recently reflecting on an exchange he had with Beyonce and Kelly Rowland, and I think maybe Michelle. Actually, he talked about the original Destiny's Child and then running into the trio later. Right. At any rate, the story that he told was that he ran into them somewhere at some award show or what have you. And in his mind, they did not acknowledge him or acknowledge him fast enough or what have you. And so he basically was like, screw them women, or said something, you know, just had an attitude with them. It was very ugly with them. Go ahead. You were about to jump in.
No, I wasn't.
Okay. So anyway, fast forward, he, I guess, woke up one day and had a revelation. Well, hey, maybe they didn't see me.
Right.
Or maybe they didn't notice. And so offered a mea culpa to them 15, 20 years later. Right. It was an interesting discussion, and I've been watching everybody, the commentary online, and I'm really curious to know your thoughts. I certainly have some as a woman, and I want to talk about that in a second, but I'm curious to know your thoughts about this 15, 20 year later apology to these women.
Well, I think it takes a lot of, I won't say guts. It's not like he won a Nobel Peace Prize for this, but it does take a certain amount of humbleness to come back and realize, like, he basically said, yo, I was being an a-hole for a good bit of he said, in those years, I was really into my own ego and stuff like that. And I realized that that was ridiculous and I was wrong. And I apologize. I'm glad it shows growth and stuff like that. You can't go back to the actual moment and correct it. But at least he goes back and says, yo, man, I realized that I was an idiot back then. I'm not an idiot anymore. So, you know?
Yeah, I definitely appreciated the humility with which he approached the topic and how he's discussed it. And I think it's great that he's reached this level of maturity. It is interesting to me, though, because as a woman, mm-hmm. every woman that you know has had an experience where a man tried to get her attention. And then when she didn't give him the attention he wanted, they have become aggressive with her,
right.
Whether they cursed her out. I know women who had things thrown at them. I've literally had men curse me out like I stole something, physically come up in my face because I rejected their attempts to talk to me, interact with me, ask me out. And it's
because everybody knows that when, you know, you talk to a woman and she doesn't say yes to you, if you start cussing her out,
she's immediately going to change her mind. But that is a lie. And so when I hear stories like his, I'm glad for his maturity. I'm appreciative of his being willing to be humble and vulnerable, even in apologizing to them. But I hope that other men will take this as a lesson, mm-hmm. because it happens so frequently. Again, every single woman that I know has had an experience where a man has approached her to get her attention. And when she declined his, you know, offer, they have become violently aggressive with them, whether physically or verbally. Right. And it is frightening. It is frightening to literally be walking down the street to have someone say, hey, Slim, you turn around, you're like, I'm not interested. And then literally spin out in front of you in a car, curse you out, throw things at you. And it happens to women all the time.
Yeah. It's about men who don't know how to be men.
Happens a lot.
Oh, yes. And I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot of men who think that manhood means that I get what I want right now.
Right,
I don't get what I want. Take that, and it's like that's not manhood. Sometimes manhood is chilling in the cut and realizing that it's okay. Somebody say no. My wife said no at first. I was like, all right, cool, chill back in the cut. I'll come back around.
Yeah.
But to immediately be intimidated, that's what happens. Is it shows a weakness of intimidation, mm-hmm. of like, oh my God, she said no to me. I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
F you, bleep, 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 bleep. And that shows your
limitations. But you hit the nail on the head, which is I always wonder in these scenarios what men think the end game is going to be when they resort to that. I'm like, right. So do you think I'm going to change my mind now? Go, you know what? I will give you my phone number. You're right. My bad.
Like even the act of like drive, I've had friends do this with you in a car. Hey, Shorty, what's up? Or something like,
What do you think is going to happen?
That's your line, my brother. That's your line. I don't claim to be a Romeo at all, but I do know that doesn't seem cool.
Not at all. We're hopping around here a lot, but I did actually want to, when we were talking about athletics before, I did want to mention Brittany Griner.
We talked
about her a few weeks ago. And so just to give you all a quick update. So Brittany Griner, who is, I think she plays with the Phoenix Mercury for the WNBA, mm-hmm. But also plays ball in Russia during the off season. And as you may probably know by now, she was arrested, accused of drug smuggling for having a vape cartridge in her luggage when leaving Russia. And so she has been detained. I think we're going on 6 months?
Yeah.
No, she got detained in February. So 4 months. 4 months. At any rate, this past week, she actually pled guilty to the charges. You know, there has been an ongoing campaign to try and have her released, including last week. She also wrote a letter to President Biden. I'm curious to know your thoughts. I actually think that her confessing to the crime is because there's no way that she has to confess.
I've heard a lot of pundits say, you know, a lot of people talking about people negotiating to get prisoners out of foreign countries, mm-hmm. that's the first step in the negotiation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people are saying that this is a good thing that she confessed.
Right. I was thinking it too.
Because it indicates that Russia is like, all right,
we're willing to, if you accept the responsibility, maybe.
Yeah. We're going to figure out, even though it's probably responsibility for something she didn't do. But hopefully we'll be
able to something go. She's done so many times that it's now a pattern that she didn't have the expectation that this would be an issue.
Well, I mean, quite honestly, when the team that she played for in Russia is owned by Russian oligarchs, these Russian oligarchs are untouchable. So they're untouchable until you get into a situation where you guys are in war. So during that time, I'm sure she did bring vape cartridges because I'm sure that they let her do what she wanted because she was protected. But once she realized she did not realize everything that's going to happen to Ukraine,
of course, right,
and that she's going to lose her protection. So,
right.
I think it's a good situation. I think it's good that her wife and everybody started making more noise about it. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, the negotiation can be pushed forward, and that we can. Right now, I think the Russia said that they wanted this guy, a famous arms dealer from Russia, who's held captive in America right now. That would be the prisoner exchange. Some people are saying that that's.
I mean, we've known that from jump that this was never about her. We've known that this was a political move. That's 1,000% what it was.
So hopefully, there's a lot of pushback on like, well, that's too big a fish to be given up or whatever. I'm like, dude, it's fine.
She's a black woman who needs protection. I'm here for it.
And the dude who was here has been in jail for 25 years.
Like, what do we care?
Push it over. Let's go. You know, let's do it.
So. Oh my God. What else you got going on?
I'm gonna get slightly political for a second. I said it like it's rare.
I was gonna say just slightly.
Hey, amazing thing happened in Great Britain, the UK this week.
Oh my God.
Boris Johnson.
Oh my God.
Fired. He got fired.
The English equivalent of Trump.
Interesting. So
except their conservative base was like, hell no, we're not going down with this.
Well, it's just interesting. I just find this so interesting because we always talk about how great, like you hear the myth of American government being so incredibly great and how we hold everybody accountable. And in Boris Johnson, who's done several dumb things, the last dumb thing is him bringing a sexual assaulter into his cabinet. Knowing that he was a sexual assaulter, making jokes about it, and
president literally went on tape saying he was a sexual assaulter. So. Right.
And then the dude started sexually assaulting people, and the whole cabinet was like, yeah. And over a week, the cabinet went from like 2 to 25 to like 40 of them said, nah, we out of here. He needs to go, and they got rid of him. And so I think about, in my estimation, how much worse Donald Trump was, and is. Still is.
Continues to be. Right.
And
he's still
how we, and how we have him on tape doing way worse things. Mm-hmm. How we know that he asked for extra votes. How we know he's been sexually assaulting many women.
We know he committed treason. We know he did a lot of stuff.
And somehow the American government has not found a way to at least, at the very least, make sure this man don't run again. At the very least, if not go to jail. So when we just talk about, we always have this myth of American exceptionalism, and We are on this show and in other places. I said it's like we're the only ones in this show and other places. We're going to demand that America be the place that it say it claims it is. We're going to hold it accountability, just like James Baldwin said, as Americans, that we should hold our government accountable to what the hell it should be, not what it claims to be.
You about to launch into Jeff Daniels' opening speech in a newsroom.
Real talk, if you haven't seen Jeff Daniels' opening speech in Newsroom, it says everything you
we're going to include. I'll include I'll see if I can find a clip on YouTube and it post it in the show favorites. Notes. I've rewatched Newsroom twice this year already. Man. Like, it's just because that moment alone is just like, but it's also interesting, just to kind of go on a little bunny trail here, to watch that show now, so many years later, to see some of the takes that they have on certain things, like even the power of social media, like their disdain for social media and so many other things in the writing is really right. Interesting. I wonder how Aaron Sorkin would, what adjustments, if any, he would make if he were writing the show today. It's really interesting. Yeah.
I don't think the show could be written today because everything's so way much more outlandish.
Right, because part of the point of the show was we're not going to be fair and balanced by having two pundits necessarily on from each political party. We're just going to tell the facts. Right. And it is what it is. However, the individual parties come out looking is on them. We don't care. We just trying to provide the American public with information. So, obviously, I just went on a Newsroom.
Can I go on a it's going to be the briefest of
yeah, go ahead.
Have you watched The Boys?
Yeah, but you don't have to watch The Boys in increments.
Yo, so we just finished the last season.
I'm just gonna say, this is the one show I will agree with you on that I get a little queasy about. Like, I do have to pull back a little bit. You're not right that I don't like gratuitous violence, but it is very gratuitous.
Rightfully so. There's several moments where I had to pause and like be like, what did I just watch?
I'm still on season one.
This show right now. Oh, you're on season one. So I just finished season three. They have gone so deep into the Trump rabbit hole.
Oh,
it's,
really?
It's spectacular.
Oh, wow.
And just to warn our people, this show is extremely violent, extremely sexual.
Yeah.
Right down my alley. But
I'm telling you, it's a great show, but it was one of those shows where it's almost stressful watching it, right? Like, you don't know what's going to happen moment for moment, because I'll just put the very first episode, where literally a guy is standing there or a person is standing there and a superhero runs through them and they explode. That was all I needed to know. That was that simulation was enough. I was like, oh, okay.
It is a satire about America.
It's a great show though. Yeah.
So well done. So well done. So please, check out The Boys, especially if you're not afraid of the craziness. Not saying you're afraid. The violence.
That's too funny. Speaking of being afraid, maybe she's not afraid, but have you heard so Kim Kardashian? I did mention a Kardashian. I'm not actually going to talk about her. But her daughter, Northwest, her oldest child with Kanye West. You heard about this?
Why that baby named Northwest? I'm sorry.
Kanye.
I was just gonna say,
of all the things Kanye's done, that's the least troubling thing.
It's fine,
done,
whatever.
Go name that child North.
But go ahead.
Even though it is silly. Anyway, so Northwest was with her mother in Paris for Fashion Week, I think, recently. And at some point, she, the paparazzi was there, and Northwest, who I think is, she's under 10, I think, but she's a young girl.
She should be like 7 or 8 or
yeah, she's around there. Yeah. She put up a sign to the paparazzi saying, stop. Say, I don't know why you're here and why you're taking pictures of us. Stop. Curious to know your thoughts about this.
I feel sorry for that day.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. You cannot make a career off of needing everybody's attention and then say stop paying attention. Right. So and I'm not blaming that baby at all. That baby,
right, of course. I mean,
of course, I'm not talking about her, but her mother and her father have built a world where it was, look at me, please look at me, please look at me, please look at me. And now they're like, why are you looking at me? You're looking at me so much. There's like, and literally with Kim Kardashian, she brings no other value than being looked at. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no, at least Kanye, for whatever you feel about Kanye, he produces music.
Right, he's an artist, yeah.
Right. So I feel bad that that little girl's in the situation where she has to tell people to stop taking pictures of her. Mm-hmm. I also feel bad that her family hasn't found ways. Have you seen Jay-Z and Beyonce's twins?
It's so funny that you were saying, as you were talking, I literally was thinking about Beyonce and Jay-Z and their children.
Right.
How they are probably the big, if not the, among the biggest stars on the planet. We barely know what their kids look like. We know Blue, right? But we have no idea what the other two look like.
And we know what Blue looks like because Blue likes to be in.
Exactly.
They obviously something has happened in their family.
And they made a decision that she could basically wait until the other ones were old enough to make a decision for themselves, right? So everything you're saying, I totally agree with. I'm amening you here, nodding my head along, because I feel terrible for that little girl, because she's right. Like, growing up is hard enough, right? Like, just going through life and growing up is hard enough. But to have a spectacle of people always watching you, I immediately was thinking about Chelsea Clinton when we were all around the same age, but how Chelsea Clinton she just had such a hard time when her parents were in office because people were watching her go through puberty, right? And so they're capturing all of the terrible and horrible things that happen when you're going through puberty. And she's having to live that out in the public eye. And to your point, her parents have chosen to be public figures. She has not.
Right.
But again, the other part of that, to your point, is, but her parents have not put anything in place. They could, even as famous as they are, they could easily put things in place to protect her from being photographed if they wanted to, because we've seen plenty of other celebrities do it.
Right.
Lots of celebrities don't. I've never seen a picture of Mindy Lahiri, but Mindy Kaling's children.
Right.
There are several people who I feel like there's a couple other. There are a lot of people who will not show pictures of their kids. And I'm not saying you have to go to that extreme, but if you are always pushing for the paparazzi to cover you, you're doing announcements and doing things where your children are featured, it's then hard to turn around and say, I want to cut off the spout. You know, I want to turn the water off. Like, you can't just put the water back in the hose now. Like,
especially with a Kardashian.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel bad for her, but I'm like, talk to your mom. talk to your mom, your grandma, and your daddy too. Lord. Have we solved the world's problems yet today?
I think so. For the culture! For the culture. For the culture. For the culture. For the culture. I got a few for the culture.
Oh, do you?
I know he says, like, he never has one, but
get into it.
All right, so I have one for the culture. I'm gonna start with a weird for the culture. So a weird for the culture. I was randomly sent a video. It was a video of a friend of mine from high school named Nathaniel Nicolanin, who's on P Valley on Stars.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and the video is a person's basically, it was sent to me by Jerry. Jerry's a young lady who used to go to Dillard with me. And she's AKA good sister. But I know her. A video was sent on Facebook where it's a picture of Nico. It's a video. He's talking. Mm-hmm. And the lady, Jerry says, hey, I went to Dillard University in New Orleans. This had Essence. And he's like, oh yeah, I know people at Dillard. Mm-hmm. And she's like, who you know at Dillard? He's like, I know Leslie Elliott and Jamal Sterling. And okay, so I see this video. I'm like, that's weird. So I just laughed it off.
Right.
And then I was immediately sent this video like 15 to 20 more times. Because apparently everybody's like, it was a promo for P Valley, the show.
Oh, really?
It was a promo, like they were doing it was a publicity conference or whatever.
Conference. Like a junket. Uh-huh.
Junket. That's what it is. So it streamed around and I keep getting messages from people saying, hey, he knows you. And I'm like,
that's dumb.
Yeah, I know you.
Well,
know.
Send it to me. We're gonna put it up on our Instagram, and we're gonna tag them.
I was about to tell people, stop sending me that. Thank you.
No, send me the link. I'm gonna include it in the show notes.
but on the other thing, shout out to Nathaniel Nicolanin, who is a real one from day one. He is my big brother. He has taught me so much and looked out for me when I was in high school. Looked out for me even in college, and always checked in on me in L.A. He's a good brother. He's the one of the stars of P-Valley. You should check out the show.
And P-Valley has got, I was going to say, it's wild. And it's got, it's like a like it's become an instant cult classic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody, I haven't even seen it yet, but I was like, I got to watch the show because it's what everybody is talking about around the proverbial water cooler. So I got to watching it.
Yeah. I just started. It is wild. It is fun. You should check it out. And shout
maybe
out
it'll
to
replace my insecure, the gap that Insecure has left in my heart.
Oh, it's
now that it's off okay. The air.
Secondly, let me shout out somebody I should shout out a long time ago. I'm going to shout out my little brother. My little brother's name is Rashad Sterling. Rashad Sterling, he's my little brother, and he has Shad versus Everybody podcast. So my little brother's been doing a podcast for years now, and I've been watching it. It's been weird to watch by who used to be my shy little brother back when he was younger, be this dude who's incredible at interviewing, funny as hell, raunchy as hell, says exactly how he feels, has no edit button. And I was watching the episode this week and was just tripped out that my little brother's doing it. He was doing this before I was. I kind of got the idea to start doing this, not only from Kay, but I was like, oh, Rashad does, I should do it too.
So, but it's funny that you keep saying my little brother, because how old is Rashad?
that dates me. That makes me feel old. Rashad just turned 36. 36,
and,
yeah. 36.
And I'm picking on you because my baby brother, who is literally 40-something, my baby right. brother, he gets mad when I call him baby brother. I was like, you know you're my big little brother. Like, right. You know what I mean? You're going to always be my baby brother.
But see, I beat on my little brother, so I don't care.
I used to beat up my son. Older brother, poor thing. He was so sweet. I was a terror to him.
But yo, check out, we'll put a link in there. Shad versus Everybody podcast, the E-Block. Shout out to Quincy Lewis, my cousin, my little brother's cousin. Oh, excuse me, my little brother's uncle. And shout out to Rashad and Malcolm Sterling, the classic pothead, for all your for all your weed needs.
You know I'm a fan Malcolm, for sure.
Malcolm, you got fans you didn't know you had, brother.
Oh, he knows because he follows us.
Oh, he did. That's what I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we'll put links to all of those to both of those podcasts, as well as drive you to share with you where you can watch P-Valley each week when it airs. So well, have we solved the world's problems today?
I'm gonna say one more time, fuck Jason Whitlock. Now we solved all those problems. Ooh, oh, I can't stand
you forgot Clarence Thomas.
Oh yeah. It goes without
I'm sorry,
saying.
I didn't mean to open up that damn word when we're wrapping up.
This episode's gonna be 20 minutes long.
Oh God. All right, let's get out of here. Jamal, say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye to the people.
We'll see y'all next week. Peace out.